Welcome, everyone, to No Filter. Eli Zarrett here with Denny McClain and Bob Page. It is Monday, President's Day, when we are recording this. You'll hear it today or tomorrow, perhaps, but or later on, doesn't matter. But we're going to talk about the lead story really locally today is that Nick Ward, Spartans star, he's a junior, right, Bob? He's a junior. And could have gone NBA last year. There was talk that he would go with Miles Bridges. Kind of a little talk, but he stuck around. And now he's hurt.
Yeah, he's not at that level. And Bridges is struggling in the NBA this year. He should have stayed another season. Nick's going to be questionable, marginal NBA player.
Well, but he's key to the Spartans.
He sure as hell is. And now with this broken hand, essentially a hairline fracture suffered Sunday in that win in one of the worst basketball games of the year against Ohio State, I think Michigan State's done. You look at that ball club, it was a national championship contender coming into this season. Of their three top players, two of them are essentially out for the year. You hear talk that Josh Langford might come back for the tournament. They're saying that maybe Nick might be able to play in the tournament, but I don't know about that. And without those guys, I mean, nobody's going to beat Duke anyway. Let's be real about it, unless a bizarre upset happens somewhere along the line. But this is a huge blow. And all of us were so looking forward to this two-game Michigan State series, which starts this coming Sunday. And now, come on. They're not beating Michigan in either game without Nick Ward.
They got no chance of winning a ball game.
They don't have a chance of winning a ball game. They can't go. How can you lose 40% of your starting team, no matter how good your depth is? That's kind of the irony, isn't it? Michigan State had much better depth than Michigan, yet they've lost 40% of their starting lineup, and Cassius Winston looks gassed because he has to play 40 minutes a game. And Michigan, which has no depth, hasn't suffered any serious injuries. So it's kind of ironic the way it turned out. But, you know, Denny, the point is this. You read the newspaper article, and I'll give Sean Windsor, I think, today in the Free Press.
Right. And he's very good, I think. He's pretty good. He writes for the Lansing State Journal.
He is good. Yeah. But Denny, here's the difference.
But
go ahead. No, he has to go back and see Izzo and the team every day. So he can't say what Bob says. They're done. Come on. Right. Let's be real. Instead, he listens to the press conference, and Tom says, well, we'll put this guy in here, and Kenny Goins has come a long way, and this guy will fill in here. And so, logically, the coach can't say, oh, we're done for the year. He has to show how they're going to move on. Well, reality is they're done for the year, but as a writer, you can't say it.
Tom is the number one cheerleader. He's expected to say whatever he needs to say to have people come back to the stadium, play, and hopefully they do something good. But you know what really impressed me about the game? The kid played 13 minutes with a broken arm. He actually went out there for 13.
Broken hand.
Broken
hand. Hairline fracture.
I don't care if it was a broken ass. It was broke. I mean, to go out there with that kind of pain, with that kind of pain, and play 13 minutes, he's got to be a big stand-up kid, boy, besides being 6'9".
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be a big heart.
And he's a big stand-up kid to put up with Izzo. Izzo's been harder than him than anybody on that ball club. And it's embarrassing the way Tom has gotten in his face, screamed at him, yanked him out of the game. And he's a remarkable young man. He sits there and he takes it. He says, no, I love coach. Right. Man, I tell you, I would have walked out. And if I were his dad, I would have called up Izzo personally and said, you got something to say to my son, you're pissed off at him, then you call him in the locker room, you can in your office, you can scream at him as loud as you want, you can tell him anything you want, but you don't do that publicly. And Denny, one of the guys I learned that from was one of the greatest leaders I've ever been around in sports, Ralph Houk. Ralph Houk was managing the Tigers, and of course he managed the 61 Yankees as well. He had problems with a lot of different guys. He would never, ever even discuss those problems with me or anybody in the media, Eli or anybody else. He would call them into the privacy of his office after a game, sit the guy down, and give him hell if the circumstances warranted
that. Then why doesn't the administration for the Michigan State take notice and do something about Tom jumping up and down and screaming at the kids? Listen, this isn't the first time he screamed at a kid on a court. This is not the first time or second time or third time. Somebody needs to make an adjustment the way he coaches. And if you make an adjustment, guess where he's going? He's going to Alabama.
Who's
going to
tell a Hall of Fame coach, administrator, to coach differently? And along the lines of what you said, Bob, When Nick Ward was busting his ass against Ethan Happ, one of the best players in the country, you know, contained him pretty well. Then one time, Happ goes around him and Dakich explains how he moved his shoulder in, and he goes, and Izzo pulls him out of the game. So here the kid's been busting his ass for 20 minutes, makes a mistake, and Izzo pulls him out of the game.
Exactly. As I've told you guys before, if I had a, well, now grandson, who was a great high school basketball player at that level, I would send him to play for Beeline. I would advise him against playing for Tom Izzo. I love Tom. He's done a great job at my alma mater. He's a wonderful coach. All I'm saying is I don't like his style. And when you look at, he's the master marionette. He thinks that people come to watch him coach.
Yes, he does.
Any game Michigan State plays, you're going to see him already pulling the marionette strings within 2 minutes. You got a starting lineup? What are you taking a kid out 2 minutes of the game for? What did he do? I just, you know, again, I'm glad Tom's at Michigan State, and don't get me wrong, because I have a lot of respect for the guy. I just don't like the way he coaches sometimes. That's all.
Well, if Tom ever breaks an arm, he'll be half the coach that he always has been. You know why? Because you won't be able to move that arm down the court, down the court, down the court. I mean, if he does it once, he does it 1,000 times a ballgame. I just think and I've always said this, his conduct is reprehensible at times. And how and why the administration has never said, Tom, calm down. Yeah. Just come on.
The thing about it is, there are a lot of guys like that. Look at that idiot who survived so many years in Bloomington, Indiana. There's so many guys like that. Their football coaches were much worse than that.
Woody Hayes.
That's his style, and he wins. And it's an amazing job that he's done at Michigan State all these years. He wins, and he doesn't cheat. There's never a hint of cheating in the Michigan State basketball program, or Michigan's for that matter, and they like that. And I have no problem with that. It's just, again, if it's your grandson or son who's going to go play basketball, you want him exposed to that kind of treatment on national TV, kind of public embarrassment?
Probably not. But I think you want your son to make the NBA, and if you think he can get there through Izzo, he'll put up with the
absolutely.
And Bob, also, there's a guy named Pat Chambers at Penn State that does the same stuff, but he gets in trouble because his team isn't as good, and he doesn't have the
track. He pushed a kid in that huddle. Was it a month ago? I was watching live when he did that. They have a huddle. He's pissed off. He takes his hand and he just shoves one of his players backwards 2 feet. I thought,
at that point in time, they're losing control of their own selves. I mean, they really do lose control of themselves. Some of it is for dog and pony show.
We did not mention Wayne Woodrow Hayes, who, of course, hit Charlie Bauman of Clemson and ended his career at Ohio State.
I did mention him about a minute and a half ago. I'll never forget that moment as long as I live.
And if you go back and look at it.
Back then. I saw that.
That was 1979.
Oh, I was watching too.
but if you watch it again, perhaps you forgot that even after the replay, the announcers said nothing about what Woody Hayes did.
Never said a word.
It is as if it didn't happen. What was Keith Jackson? It didn't even happen.
Was it Keith Jackson? Because, you know, I was thinking it might have been Chris Platitude. Now, a lot of the younger listeners that we have right now have no idea who I'm talking about.
Neither do I.
That was the nickname for one of the most famous sportscasters in America.
Chris Schenkel.
Yeah. Who said all the years he did ABC college football, he was quoted in the media as saying, When a young man fumbles that ball on the football field, I will never, ever say his name because it might be too embarrassing to his family and his friends.
Oh, my
goodness. But not announce the name of a player who fumbled.
Boy, have times changed. Before we get off basketball, I just want to say I didn't see the NBA All-Star game last night, but 178-164.
Good defense.
Giannis' team had 53 points in the first quarter and went on to lose the game, which could be some type of record. But I watched Saturday. I didn't see the game, but I watched a lot of the slam dunk thing Saturday night. And the thought I had overall is, remember when the NBA in the 80s said, this is entertainment, or something about the NBA, it's all entertainment or something like that. And it's true. They went from a league that was characterized, whether fairly or unfairly, as a bunch of coke-snorting, lazy players. And back then it was a little bit racist, too, because the league was mostly black, and that you didn't have to watch to the last 2 minutes. And the league went from an awful image of lazy players to what it is now, incredibly dedicated athletes that play all year long and are maybe the greatest athletes in the world.
I join you in not watching the game on Sunday night. I don't watch any of that stuff. I'm a former gym rat. I'm a lifelong basketball wacko, and I consider myself a student of the game. That ain't basketball.
No, you know what? Okay,
no, it's not at all. Nobody said it was, though.
You know what it is? It's entertainment. Like
what
that's
it is.
And by the way,
I don't enjoy it either, by the way. I
not to go too far back.
Just going up and down the court for 2.5 hours isn't exactly a basketball game.
It's 180 degrees from when Denny played for Jim Campbell, who refused to do any type of entertainment in the ballpark. I'm not here to entertain fans. The game should be entertaining enough. To the NBA, which has taken entertainment to the max, you go to a game, it's like a 3-ring circus, and that's what Saturday night was. And yes, it isn't pure basketball, it's just dunking, but very entertaining, and the NBA gets it. That's why the NFL wants Adam Silver to be their new commissioner, because the No Fun League needs a little more pizzazz in it, especially the garbage that goes on off the court.
Well, how dare you? How dare you rip Jim Campbell? Listen, he used to have bat day, cap day,
ladies day. My mom used to take us to
ticket day. Ladies day, ladies day.
Polish American night had all of that stuff.
About? Polish sausage night he used to have.
When you were playing, they had ladies day, and my mother used to take my two brothers and me down to the ballpark. You'd get a seat in the upper deck in left field. Mom paid 50 cents or something like that, and the kids were free. Yeah. We went to that a lot because we didn't have a lot of money, you know, when I was growing up.
In any case, it was 1976 that the ABA started the slam dunk contest. Finally, baseball got the message 9 years later and started doing the home run derby. So you have to have some type of entertainment for the fans, and the NBA, it just showed me over the weekend, is so far ahead of the others. And the TNT thing with Barkley and Shaq, those guys are hilarious.
Hang on a minute.
They're hilarious. It was great entertainment.
Who has the most audience for their All-Star game? Who has the most audience?
Baseball, I'm sure.
And why?
The history.
The game matters.
Home
the
runs.
Game matters.
Yeah, home runs.
Now,
well,
more than that, Danny, the game matters now.
That
too.
Thing.
Well, not
they
anymore,
want,
Bob. They changed that. They changed
it.
They changed that.
Yes.
No, I thought it was
last year. The team that wins the All-Star game does not get home field in the World Series.
But listen, the Monday night thing that they do, the home run hitting contest, is tuned. The first couple of years was tuned in by unbelievable numbers. It's obviously by down now, but the first couple of years it was incredible. Yeah. This year it was pretty big, I understand too, because Judge was in the contest again.
Right.
And when you have guys like that who hit the ball that far, that hard, you're going to get yourself an audience.
And
but it's still the only
All-Star game. Bob, you watch that too? Do you watch that too, or is that beneath you?
It's still the only All-Star game that you watch that there's something going on.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. When Eli and I were boys growing up, I grew up in Detroit, as you know, and Eli split time between Long Island and Massachusetts. We had the exact same favorite TV show. It was our favorite show. It was, and you're a little too old for this, Denny. And of course, that was Home Run Derby.
Oh, yeah.
Home Run Derby.
Mark Scott.
Yeah.
Mark Scott, that little field and whatever the hell, with 290-foot fences.
They did that in the old PCL field out there. Right. And Mark Scott was a terrible announcer, but the players were terrible on the air, too. Yeah. You'd have Mickey Mantle versus Al Kaline, or Willie Mays versus Hank Aaron. And Scott said, boy, that was a long drive, Willie. Oh, yes, Mark, it was.
It was hysterical.
And they have the reruns out there now. You know, Baseball Network does them from time to time.
I wouldn't
and
leave the couch. If I got a home run derby and leave it to Beaver back-to-back, I would never leave the house.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you know this, I suspect you do, but after that show was finished taping, Mark Scott was killed in a car accident in Southern California. That's why that show didn't go on for years, because he was killed in a car accident. What a great show. But the thing about it is, Danny, you know what ruined that for most of us? It was one thing when we were boys growing up to watch Frank Robinson and you go on, you know, Harmon Killebrew, whatever, all these great players. But when the later home run derby contest came into being, we all knew they were on roids. These guys were steroid monsters, and that took just a little out of watching Home Run Derby for me.
Oh, I don't think it had anything to do with it.
And Berman going back 400 times did it for me.
You forgot one great television show, The Rifleman. I mean, had The Rifleman been there.
Chuck Connors, the former Brooklyn Dodger and Chicago Cubs player.
First baseman Chuck Connors, 6'7" and good guy, by the way. I met him later
in life. Did you play? Oh, you met him.
Okay. He was a former Dodger farm. I think did he ever make the big club, Chuck Connors? He might have.
The Cubs. Oh, he did. He certainly did. Yeah, he played for the Cubs, too. Yeah, Denny's team when he was a kid.
He played with the Cubs for a while.
To follow up a little bit on
that. He had one problem. He could act better than he could play first base.
Well, no doubt about that. His career in acting was a lot longer.
No, you know, how long was the Rifleman on, that show?
I don't know.
1 year.
That's it?
That's it.
That's all?
That's it.
Didn't know that show lasted a year with Johnny Crawford as his little sidekick. Man, of course, the three of us old men are talking about the show, and our producer, Brandon,
has no idea.
Everybody's seen it.
How about Leave It to Beaver? Brandon, you ever see Leave It to Beaver?
I bet you've seen The Rifleman too.
So anyway, just a little side note. Little side note here. So I met the Beaver when I was at WRIF in the early '80s, and he came through town because the HBO was doing like the Leave It to Beaver, revival with him and Tony Dow. And so I'm talking to Jerry Mathers, who was 2 years older than me, but when he was in Miss Lander's fourth grade class, I was in fourth grade. We talked about that. Then I said, why are you doing this reunion? He says, I got no money. We're broke.
Oh.
I said, really? He said, no. Back then, I just got paid for the show. I got no residuals whatsoever. So Leave It to Beaver, if he had any type of representation, he would have been set for life the way, a guy like Tim Allen signed a $50 million deal for Home Improvement when he left, and Seinfeld makes tens of millions a year just on reruns. So it's kind of sad.
And just think how little money Chuck Connors made. The Rifleman making $500 an episode.
Maybe he had...
And in baseball, less than that.
Maybe he had some residuals, though. I don't know. Maybe he had...
You never know.
Anyway, to just quickly touch on what we started with the whole Nick Ward and the newspaper writers having to kind of play along and let's see whether they do well, because you can't write off Michigan State and say they're dead and then face Tom Izzo at a news conference next week.
Are you going to the press conference?
No.
No, not either.
No, not going to go either. That's why we can sit here in our ivory tower and say whatever we want. But so the Tigers, this is interesting. I'm reading this article. One of you guys sent it to me. I don't know. Anthony Fenech, who's a good guy, also a Free Press writer, covering the Tigers and talking about the new sign that shows the picture of the commissioner's trophy and says, believe this is going to be us. Don't walk through this door until you do. And so the players, of course, are going to want to believe they can win. These are young guys that want to make the team and make a mark in the major leagues. They're not going to go into the season saying, we suck, we're no good. But they do suck, and they are no good, and they can't hope to be 500 this year, I don't think. But then at the end, he says, they think they're going to the World Series. I kind of want to believe them. This is, again, you have to, when you're a beat writer, because you have to show up every day, you have to kind of take the company line for a while and risk the risk of writing them off. Even if you'd written them off last year and they went 36-37, which they did to start, you would have felt very foolish at that point. Even though they did fall apart.
What are you trying to say?
On.
You got to kiss their ass to get an interview?
I'm just saying that it's a different
role.
But
that's what you're saying, isn't it?
He can't say what he really thinks because he's got to be with them all year long.
He travels with them.
But that's okay. I'm not knocking him. That's his job. That's why we call the show No Filter. It's a little bit different. But I'm giving him, I'm throwing him a bouquet saying I don't think he really believes it. But he kind of has to say it at this point.
I don't think I've ever seen a tough beat writer. Now, I think everybody who is from Detroit and of a certain age listening to us now remembers when Denny dumped a bucket of water over the head of Detroit Free Press beat writer Jim Hawkins at the Tigers clubhouse.
Yeah,
but even now, you say you weren't really mad at him.
No,
right?
We weren't mad at each other. No, what happened, make a long story short, Watson Spolster's the guy that I got first.
Tigers beat writer for the Detroit News.
He was a beat writer. And he, by the way, he was the only guy that I ever played around a beat writer that was nasty. And Watson had a problem. I mean, with all due respect, he was an alcoholic. So once he started drinking before and during the game and after the ball game, he got to be a little contentious, for the lack of a better term. And he would write stuff one time, and then they used to say he would change it. Jerry Green said, hell, he'd change half the stories by the time he woke up in the morning before it could be published. It's because he didn't want to say all those nasty things because he had to go in the clubhouse again that night. So that's the way he conducted
That's what
his
we're
life.
Talking about,
right?
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Just what Eli's talking about.
Because
you got to face the players. Oh, and by the way, for people who don't know, John Spolstra, the head coach of the Miami Heat, is his grandson.
Sure, yeah.
It's not John Spoelstra.
John Spoelstra's his dad. His dad was president of the Jersey Nets. Spo is his grandson.
Right. What's his
coaches
first name?
Of Miami.
Is it Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what else Fenech says. It defies logic and appeals to an animal brain part of my fandom, but the enthusiasm and positivity the Tigers are demonstrating right out of the gate this year is catching. Almost the entire pitching staff was in Lakeland early, ready to get started. The full squad is already present, working out. This team wants to win. Well,
That kid has not been to a lot of spring trainings.
No, he has not.
He's not been to a lot of spring trainings. Hope springs eternal in the month of February.
That's right. You have zero losses.
It normally lasts till about the second week in April.
But when you realize, we're in trouble here.
Wait till the 15th of May. Now, listen.
Hey, you guys talk about the NBA All-Star Game. How come nothing about the NHL All-Star Game? This year, You know, I mean, every game's 14-10. It's a joke. This year they split it up into three different games, and they still had 10 goals scored in two of them. So you got the Pro Bowl. Nobody wants to play in the game. I got a sore left pinky. I can't make the trip this year. The only legit All-Star game left is the Major League Baseball All-Star game. And when you and I were kids, Eli, and when Denny was a kid, they played two of them. There are a lot of young people don't know. They had two All-Stars.
Yeah, that's how Al Kaline played in more All-Star games than there was years in the major leagues.
Yeah, that's right.
And, played in 22 All-Star games. I think it was only the league 21 years.
Before Bob joined us, you and I did talk about the college kids who refused to play in various football games because they wanted to save their NFL careers.
Right.
And we took them over the coals pretty good for about 3 days, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's Bush. You go to the college, you agree to play. What the hell is the difference of the last game of the season and anything else behind it? You go.
Yeah, we did do that.
Yes, we did do that. We did that.
Signed the letter of commitment. You
agree
with
that.
I got two words for you. Jake Butt.
Jake Butt.
Jake Butt. Got hurt, blew his knee out in a meaningless bowl game against Florida, and it's cost him millions of dollars in the pros.
Well, you know what?
Tough bull. Come on.
Tough bull.
No, come on.
All right, Max Scherzer.
Go ahead, Max Scherzer.
He went crazy.
Now we're getting serious. Now they're getting serious topics here. Go ahead.
Baseball, there has always been a rule about collusion. We've heard the word collusion for a long time now with this thing with the president going on, but that's not who we're talking about. Today, the owners have gotten around the rule of collusion in Major League Baseball, and I'll tell you how they've done it. They talk out loud now. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Cubs manager Joe Badden the other day on the MLB Network at the winter meetings outlined point by point why they didn't want Harper. They ripped them a new one. Yankees general manager Brian Cashman told his local media three times to ignore the Harper story because they didn't want him. And then the Dodgers executives pointed out to reporters how poorly Harper's left hand was to fit into the Dodgers lineup. You know what? Doesn't make any sense. They're talking out loud. They're telling you problems with the player you're not supposed to be discussing.
You can't tamper by saying, gee, what a great player. It'd be great to have him on our team. But you can say, we don't really want any free agents or him because. So you can trash a guy, but you can't praise him because that's tampering.
Scherzer's
let's
a pretty
put some perspective to this.
Let me do one thing. Let me finish this. Take me 10 seconds. Scherzer's a pretty bright guy, you know.
Very bright.
And he did a complete percentage breakout on any number of things. But the one thing he did was what teams are tanking. He researched the fact and confirmed that 35% of the teams in the major leagues today, the last 3 years, have tanked.
And when we say that, be careful when you say that, because you're talking about management, like the Detroit Tigers.
Right, not
management.
The players tanking. Right, you're right. Different.
The players aren't tanking. Management, the team ownership is tanking.
Right. Right.
But let's put some perspective on this. Max Scherzer, by the way, in an article over the weekend, they're training right a few miles from my house here in West Palm Beach. Max Scherzer said that the fact that so many free agents have not signed is, quote, poison in the game. Now, I'll tell you a team that wanted Bryce Harper, the Washington Nationals. So they made him an offer of 10 years guaranteed for $300 million.
$300 million.
Now, here's what he made last year, $13 million, which is a hell of a lot of money. But they offered him $30 million a year. You go on baseballreference.com, which I did this morning and looked this up. They post the complete career stats of all players. And at the bottom, they put average season, an average of everything he's done in the big leagues. Bryce Harper's numbers in an average season, he hits 32 home runs, drives in 91 runs, and hits .279 while being a decent outfielder. Now, is that worth $30 million to you? Maybe that's why Joe Maddon says he doesn't fit the Cubs. We're not paying $30 million a year on a guaranteed 10-year contract for that kind of production. But you know who is? The Phillies. By the time people are listening to this, the Phillies may have already given him his $300 million.
So where do you draw the line? Has he got to knock in 200 runs? Has he got to hit 60 home runs? 91 RBIs and hitting .279 and hitting 30-some home
runs.
That's
pretty good.
That's a hell of a year. Everybody liked to have that.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
But it's pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I don't know. I don't know, in 1961, Norm Cash hit 41 home runs, won the batting championship with 361, and drove in 132. And that was in 100, was it, they playing 154 still?
We're not talking about that.
Well, whatever, that's a hell of a year.
We're talking about money right now. We're not talking about this kid.
Yeah, and
performed.
How much will you pay a player based on his performance?
They wanted to pay $300 million.
They
that's
did.
What they
he
wanted
said
to
no.
play. And somebody's and no. going to come close to the $300 million.
I said the Phillies will.
The Harper, yeah. Harper wants, Philadelphia wants Harper. Right?
Yeah, I just said that twice. Yeah.
It is very hard to feel sorry for the players in this situation. I do agree with Scherzer, though, that the publicly denigrating a player's stats is kind of Bush.
It's terrible. It's just terrible.
Let's take a little break here. Hear from our sponsor, since you forgot the copy for your sponsor today. But I have my sponsor
three in
today.
A row for Denny. Three strikes, and that sponsor's out.
Then I want to get into Jacob deGrom, and we can finish up Scherzer after this. But we know one thing for sure about men, besides the fact that they like sports, and that is they hate going to the doctor. They'll lie around moaning for days before their wife or their girlfriend finally says, "Get off the couch, get your lazy ass to the doctor." So what we say to you is, you know you hate your contacts and reading glasses. You know your life would be better to see 20/20 up close and far away. And if you get off the couch, get a free evaluation, maybe you'll finally stop complaining that you can't see S blank blank T anymore. Seriously, everyone should get an eye exam every 2 years to check for things like glaucoma, and it's covered by your regular insurance. It's free. No excuse. Dr. Yaldo, Michigan's most experienced eye surgeon, is having given over 50,000 of Trotter's life-changing surgeries, custom LASIK, or the amazing multifocal lens implants for people 50-plus. So pick up the
phone.
Don't
forget me.
I'm not forgetting you, but you're going to have to pay something. Pick up the phone. It's free. And if you do get the surgery, you'll get the Drew and Mike. Well, you also get the Drew and Mike discount. You get the no-filter discount. Be free of glasses, contacts, and the hated reading glasses. 1-800-399-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES. Or go to Yaldo Eye Center.
Let me finish the story now. 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
Quit predicting how long it's going to
take.
The Washington Nationals can't go back and sign him now because they've already added $240 million to their bottom line for the next year.
Right.
That takes care of him. Now let's see if he goes to Philadelphia.
And I think Manny Machado, I hear now, maybe 8 years, $240 million. So the fact that the market changes. I don't blame the owners. And by the way, Rob Manfred said there's nothing wrong with free agency, and I tend to agree with him.
I agree.
And you know, you're right, Denny. 10 years, $300 million, and 8 years, $240 million. You only need one team to be interested in you, and whatever. They'll get their money.
And don't tell me Madden would not want to have Harper in Wrigley Field. He was told to shut up, and he shut up. He almost blew the Cubs winning the World Series a couple of years ago with some of the worst management I ever saw.
What do you guys think of Mike Moussaka?
If you don't want Harper in Wrigley Field, you're sick.
What'd you say, Bob?
What do you think of Mike Moussaka?
Moustakas.
Sorry about that.
Moussaka is a Greek dish that I really like, but I like the vegetarian version better.
That's where my mind is this
morning. He's like a 250 hitter.
He's a good ball player. He's a 250 hitter. He's pretty good defensively. Got a little pop. So he just returned to the Brewers over the weekend, and they signed him to a one-year deal with an option for like $10 million. Mm-hmm. He's making $10 million this year as a 250 hitter. I think that's pretty good. But they're just not going to sign anybody like this, well, with the exception of the Phillies, perhaps, and Harper, to these ridiculous long-term guaranteed contracts. And I think that's the way it should go.
Problem in the NBA, too, but Barkley brought up this weekend along those lines, is these super teams, you know, and that's ruining the competitive balance in the league, where three players get together with their agent and say, we have to all play together. He did that with Miami, and the Philadelphia has done it, too. And so whatever, there's a lot of money in sports, and we're tired of players complaining about not getting enough.
I got one other thing here.
But
Danny, listen to me, damn it. Like I said, I got one other thing for you right here. I'm going to ask you a question.
But, I mean, I don't hear the players complaining, except for Scherzer, who did this commentary last September, and he did
Verlander's
it again now.
Popping
oh, come on, Verlander's
off
popping off, and even like, they're all a lot of them are popping
Verlander's
off.
Verlander's popping off because he wants to play till he's 45 years old.
Verlander said the system is broken. That's a pretty serious thing to say.
Yeah, 40, yeah.
Right. Now, Danny, here's a question I got for you.
$34 million a year, and the system is broken,
too. Yeah. We had an announcement this weekend that this will be the final year, 2019, for C.C. Sabathia.
Yeah.
Hall of Famer?
Yep.
Or not? Hall of Famer?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Well, I'll tell you what. Right now, coming into the season, He's 246, so he's going to have over 250
wins. Wow, I didn't know that.
153. His ERA is 3.70, and he's going to finish with well over 3,100, maybe 3,200 strikeouts. Mm. If you go on, again, baseballreference.com, and you look at his numbers compared with other similar guys, you're right in saying he's probably not a Hall of Famer because he's up there with Andy Pettit and David Wells and Tim Hudson and Louis Tion. But he's also up there with Mike Messina, who just got into the Hall of Fame, and with Jack Morris, who's into the Hall of Fame. So I think that a strong case is going to be made for CeCe Sabathia. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion, he's not a Hall of Fame pitcher.
Well,
that's my personal opinion, but we'll see.
You're right about one thing. Sabathia has got a shot. You're absolutely right, and I'll tell you why. We go to Cooperstown every year. Been there 17 straight years now. And some of the guys we've got in you would disagree with, absolutely disagree with. But Sabathia, he's right on the fence. I didn't think Jack should have got in. I think Jack should have got in the old-fashioned way, let the people
or
vote him
all.
In. Or not at all.
Jack had more wins, 254, than 246.
And here's a comparison for you, not necessarily in terms of career numbers.
Of four.
But
Okay, 3-9. Bathia's 3-7-9. Go ahead.
If you got one big game that you got to win, World Series, whatever, and you want a fat, out of shape, obese left-handed pitcher to go for you, to start for you, you want Sabathia?
Mickey Lolich is in the game. I'm sorry.
Mickey Lolich. Yeah. You want Sabathia or Mickey Lolich?
No, I agree.
Oh, I take Lolich.
I would too, absolutely.
Yeah, I take Lolich.
Lolich should be. He's never going to make it.
But Lolich should be on a higher plane than Sabathia. Should be on a higher plane than the guy, what's his name last year from the Yankees? Messina. He should have been in a higher plane than that.
He only won 217, though, and he pitched a long time is why they're holding it against it. Lolich. But he played for a lot of bad teams. He only won 217 games.
Well, you wind up playing for a lot of bad teams because you're pitching bad.
I look at Sabathia.
Sometimes.
Isn't it amazing how that works out?
I look at Sabathia. That's kind of Don Sutton syndrome. In other words, a really good pitcher for a long, long time, but never won a Cy Young, you know, and never led an ERA, but still every year, you know, took the ball, et cetera. So Sabathia is kind of, and longevity will let you accrue stats that look Hall of Famish, even though in total you look at him and say, not really a Hall of Fame pitcher.
But every time this guy took the mound, and living in New York for more than 30 years, as I have, I've seen him an awful lot.
Now, who are you talking about now?
Sabathia.
I'd sit there and look at Sabathia and say, hey, don't you have any personal pride? Son, you got to be at least 100 pounds overweight. 100 pounds overweight. And what are you showing about your dedication to the game and to your craft of pitching and your dedication to your teammates if you're going out to the pitching mound looking like that? I just, he drives me nuts.
Well, let me say this. If they're going to start giving Cy Youngs out to a guy that wins 10 ball games, then the game is really turned upside down.
Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry. How the hell does a starter today wind up in the Hall of Fame without any damn complete games? How does he wind up in the Hall of Fame?
Well, the game has changed.
How does a guy wind up? And let me take it further.
Sound like an old fart.
I'm not an old fart. How does the game allow a guy who pitches one inning every other night in a major league ball game get in the Hall of Fame? I don't get it. The guys that used to really be relief pitchers pitch two and three innings. They come in the sixth inning and put the game
down.
Is
it Mariano Rivera's fault that the nature of the game changed?
No, it isn't.
He only pitched an inning at a time. No.
I just don't. Let's change the rules. Let's make the rules compatible with what we're doing with the players getting into the Hall of Fame.
Make pitchers pitch longer?
No, I don't know. There has to be something that can be edited that a player can get into a position based upon another set of statistics. And I don't know what they are. I mean, sitting here right now, I couldn't even come up with an idea. But somehow, some way, you got to qualify him better than pitching an inning every two or three days.
It's going to get
I'll tell you what. I'll give you, say you're sitting there right now and you can't come up with an idea. Now, we got 4 days until we record the program the next time. I want you to think about from the time you broke in minor league baseball, Denny, throughout your major league career, how many other pitchers you knew, played with or against, who blew out their arms and had essentially nothing careers because of overuse.
Sure.
A ton of guys. So you blame Major League Baseball for saying, hey, we want to conserve the arms of guys like Jacob deGrom, and you can go on and so on and so forth. So we're going to let him go seven innings. We got a guy throwing 100 miles an hour in the bullpen. Let's bring him in to close the game out. I don't blame him.
But you think 10 wins qualifies for a Cy Young?
You're talking about 10 complete games, not 10 wins. That's a different deal.
He was 10-9, but let's see, he had a 1.7 ERA.
Oh, except, you mean DeGrom last DeGrom. Year. Come no, on, that I, was an I agree with you on
amazing
that.
Amazing
no,
season.
With you on that.
Come on,
you
got to
agree with me, right?
Yeah. But the thing about it is I do
what?
See the
What do you
Mets,
agree with? What do you agree
and
with?
He had so much hard luck. It was just awful what happened to DeGrom last year.
Wins is not the number one determination. I'm not knocking
well,
your 31
not what
wins.
I've heard recently.
No. But when you got a 1.7 ERA, when you got
was
a
amazing.
When you got a WHIP of 0.91, and by the way, yours was 9.05 in 1968, so he had just as good a WHIP as you did. He also had a higher ratio of strikeouts. You had you had 280.
Let me ask you a question.
He had 269 and pitched 130 innings less.
Hang on, let me ask you the most important number. How many did he win?
10.
10. You mean 10 in a whole season?
Yes.
I had 10 in April. My God almighty, let's not even go there.
I agree with you. Again, this kid was amazing last year, but you can't win a Cy Young if you're 10-9.
You
can't.
I agree with you. And I'll tell you something else, why Lolich kind of petered out at the end of his career. He got very, very, very mad at Mr. Ilitch because you're not going to believe
Ilitch.
I don't know if you know this, but Ilitch had promised Mickey Lolich.
You mean John Fetzer?
No, Mickey Lolich.
Mike Ilitch?
Ilitch had promised Mickey Lolich a pizzeria when he got out of the game.
Oh.
And
that
somehow, they got into an argument. And lo and behold, Ilitch took the pizzeria away from Mickey. And Mickey's been peeved ever since. Honest to God, it's a true story.
You're kidding.
Ilitch had nothing to do with the
not
Tigers.
Only that, not only that, but let me tell you something. You didn't read his book, that contemporaneous thing that he called the book. Yeah. You didn't read it. You got to read about the pizza.
It's no
the, it's in the book. Yeah.
Now, what year did that? Because I know in 84 when they won the World Series, Mickey was bitching that the seats they gave him were way up like in the last
row. Remember that? And by the way, some other guy left him at an airport. Remember that?
Yeah,
some other guy left him at an
anyway,
airport.
Anyway.
Denny, for our Detroit audience right now, I got a trivia question you'll never get.
Okay.
Mike Ilitch, as I think most people know, owned the Detroit Caesars professional softball team before he ever bought the Tigers and the Wings.
Right.
Who was the announcer, the game announcer on the Detroit Caesars softball
play-by-play.
Games.
Ray Lane?
One down.
You're looking at him.
Eli Zarrett?
Hey, you got on the second guess. Eli Zarrett.
I got to tell you, you're talking about money. Here's how time
How much
changed.
Did they pay you?
I got paid $25 a game.
Oh, my
But
goodness.
We usually did double headers.
Way
so 50
too
bucks.
Much.
So we were in Minnesota. We were in Minnesota for the World Softball Series playing the Minnesota Norsemen. And I had to get to the ballpark early.
How did you get there, in a bus or a plane?
No, we flew out there. I used to fly with the whole Ilitch family, like eight kids. We all flew together. And I'm getting ready to go to the ballpark. I got to get there early. I got to take a cab. Now, I'm making $50 for the two games. And I'm kind of looking like forlorn to Mr. Ilitch. And I go, I got to go over to the ballpark. I probably got some, let's see if I get some cab. So he reaches, probably gives me a $20 bill and says, keep the change for a $2 cab ride. I felt rich. I walked out of that ballpark that night with $68 to the good, and I got there for free. It was that's how times have changed. But anyway, that's not the DeGrom story. We can debate how great a season he had.
10 wins.
It was. Let's not say he had
10 wins. How many shutouts?
He won the Cy Young Award.
Excuse me. How many shutouts?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know. I don't care at this point. It's not the story anymore.
See, now the Cy Young is not important anymore, Bob.
The game has changed, Denny. You're 74 years old.
It has. I agree with you, but he's trying to qualify this as he's sitting across from me, knowing that his numbers mean nothing.
He won the Cy Young Award. Okay, all right. So this is the story, though, is that now that he's got two more years. They own him for two more years. Now, it's true, he didn't make the majors till he was 26 because he had a Tommy John surgery in 2010. So he pitched several years in the minors, making virtually no money. So he's kind of new to the money. He made $7 million last year, just won arbitration for $17 million. So he's still made 30, 40 million in his career. Point is, he's due for a big payday in 2 years. What he says is, and I don't agree with this, and I know you'll have some thoughts about this, he goes, you play this game because you love it, then you have an opportunity to look out for your family and your future, so you have to see what's right for you to do, and I think that's a discussion that's going to have to be had, because he's saying he may pull back how many innings he pitches this year after 217 to protect his arm, and that is a big can of worms, and you're in a pennant race, and your teammates want to win,
right,
and you're saying, you know, I'm over my pitch count and my innings. So that's a real ugly can
also,
of worms.
And that think also
think
happened.
About this. Think
that,
about this.
Hang on a second. That also happened to Strasburg. They pulled Strasburg out of the lineup a couple of years ago when they had a chance to do the whole thing, too. Remember, they took him out. But no, not Strasburg, the guy with the Mets.
Oh, yeah, Harvey, Matt Harvey.
But he did finish pitching that year, didn't he,
yeah,
Harvey?
Yeah, he went back into the playoffs.
Because the fans were getting ready to kill him.
Right. And Scott Boras is the one who said we
But here's the thing about what DeGrom said. He says, I may pull back the innings. Now, think of this. It's 1968, and Denny McClain's in his heyday. And he's going around the seventh or eighth inning, and he's sitting in the dugout when it's time to come back out in the field for the eighth inning. And Mayo Smith walks over to Denny McClain and says, Denny, what are you doing? Nah, I'm not pitching. Taking myself out of the game. What do you mean you're not? How is this guy going to do this? I'm going to cut back the innings when they go to him and say, get out there and pitch the sixth. Now, I'm not going out there again. He'd be in violation of his contract, for goodness sake.
And you know what,
it's like telling the boss you're not going to work. I'm not coming to work.
And you know what the players would say to him, too?
Yeah.
He would not be welcome.
You're letting us down, pal. We got to win this game. Yeah, we need you. Get out there.
He would not be welcome. Not very long.
It's a remarkable thing that he would say in that. I don't think the guys in New York really knocked him for it. The writers, they kind of this is stuff, if you heard it back in your day, you wouldn't even believe it. And now it kind of falls into form about the way guys look at their career and their longevity. And don't blame it on them totally, because there's a guy in the counting pitches in the dugout who tells a starter, you got to come out after this inning, and he still wants to play, and the team tells him he can't play anymore. Well, so it works both ways.
I will tell you off the air, I heard a conversation this past summer.
Aren't you telling it on the air?
I'm telling it on the air. No, I'm not going to tell it on the air. I'm going to tell you off the air.
What's the point of mentioning it now if you're going to tell it later?
The story is so dramatic.
Come on, Danny, tell the story. You're talking about.
You got a great story, and you're not going to tell
us. I'm in a clubhouse. No, because I promised I wouldn't say
a word. Is this the part of the story or just
This is the heart of the story.
Okay.
And these three guys are having a conversation about how well do you have to pitch? How well do you have to do this, all got to do with pitching.
Is back in your day now?
No, right now.
Okay.
And one of the guys, a veteran player, said, listen to me and listen to me one time. You don't have to win anymore. You just got to pitch well. Just pitch well, and you'll make more money than you've ever dreamed. But get them out for at least six innings, and you'll make more money than God's ever dreamed of giving you. And the guy said, are you serious? You mean you don't go out to win? He said, you just go out to pitch as well as you can, because you're not going to have the opportunity to win it or lose it anyway later on in the game.
Yeah. You know,
and he's right. Totally right.
I agree with that. Go ahead. Bob, you going to say something?
Danny got me sidetracked with this thing, but the idea is you have to pitch as well as you can, no matter what the circumstances, because there are eight other guys out there plus a DH who might determine the outcome of the game. So, of course, you want to win, but you feel you probably will win if you go out there and give 100%. So I'm not shocked by that story. It doesn't offend me at all. You always want to pitch as well as you can and play as hard as you can.
It's going to change even more. I was at an event with Jack Morris about three or four years ago, and he said to me before we went out, we did a little show at the Motor City Casino, and he said, you know what's going to happen pretty soon? You're going to have a starter pitch three innings and have six more guys come in and pitch one inning after that, because everybody's about max effort. You don't pace yourself over the course of a game, and you could speak on that, whether you paced yourself over the course of a game, because you're going all the way. In fact, as we said it earlier, in the Game 6 of the World Series, he was up 12-1, and after a two-hour rain delay, they still sent you back out to finish the game. So, you know, it's...
And you know what you just talked about, putting different guys into different circumstances, first inning, second inning. Tampa Bay did it this year. They did it a number of times. They started a left-hander, and after the first hitter in the ballgame, he switched the pitcher
around. It's a matchup.
Absolutely.
But the
league is looking at that. They don't want that to happen anymore.
So Eli's talking about pacing yourself. Any team, I don't care if it's the Indians, whatever ball club it was in your era, when you got down to 7, 8, and 9 in the order, 9 being, of course, the pitcher, you did pace yourself, of course, right? You weren't working those guys that we would work against Mantle or Maris or any of the great stars of that era.
Well, it had a lot to do with if you had a lead, and we're talking about if you got a lead, you're going to challenge more hitters later on in the ballgame. You're going to just try to throw good strikes somewhere around the plate and get somebody to hit the ball and play. If you were in a 1-1 game, a 0-0 game, something really tight, you pitch differently.
So are you saying you did pace yourself? I understand, you know, what you are saying.
No, I never paced myself.
You never paced yourself.
No, never, never. And I tried to get in good enough shape, not only before the season started, spring training, but by the time I left spring training, we normally pitch 9 innings before we left spring training. So we thought we were in pretty good shape. We were and we weren't. But after pitching, you know, 10 or 12 games, you were in pretty good shape if you're going nine.
Now, speaking of Lolich, he used to say getting in shape meant pitching. How do you get in shape for pitching? You pitch.
There's a lot of truth to that.
And so I said, wow, that's not how they do it today. You get in shape by running and by doing the right weights and by scientifically stretching this muscle.
We see these guys, McLean and Lolich. You see them in spring training on the field. Their idea of getting in shape was to jog around the outfield they pitched a few innings. I mean, give me a break.
That's exactly right. I mean, we did not. You know, listen, they're lifting weights today. The guys are pressing 3,000 pounds. I mean, I don't know what the hell they do with the weights, but the thing about it is we didn't do that, and we still won. The game can be played many ways. You can get ready for the game many ways. And as far as I'm concerned, what we did in the 60s and 70s is better than what they produce today. I'm sorry. And that's not a homer. That is not a homer. It's just the way the game has changed. And not always for the better.
Well, you're bordering on getting into this whole thing comparing eras and all major sports, not just in baseball. I mean, these kids today, I'll never forget the first time I interviewed Bobby Hull when I was a young reporter. I was shocked that he was really about a half inch shorter than I.
Little guy.
Of course, he was barrel-chested. And I'll never forget Hull telling me, these kids today are so much better than we ever were. They're so much bigger and stronger, and they were. But I'm talking now 40, 45 years ago. You look at every sport now. Frank Howard was Aaron Judge's size, I guess, in your era.
Right.
But he sure didn't have Aaron Judge's power. He wasn't in that kind of shape. I mean, the guys today in baseball
are huge.
They're so much better.
In all sports, they're
Danny
that much
McLean
better.
In his
they're
heyday and Mantle, all you guys would have been superstars in baseball of today. All you guys. But the average player, I think, is better today and bigger today than in any other era.
I think they really are better. No question about it.
Let's do a little follow-up here. We're kind of, I don't know how much time we have left. I want
to a lot of time.
Keep it to 50 minutes or so.
I don't have to be anywhere until Tuesday.
I just want to follow up and kind of close the book on the Matt Kuchar story. It was kind of interesting. Stories take on a life of their own, you know, and I think the way you got to look at things today is assume everything you do and say is public. And if he had realized that, obviously, they would have handled this a lot different. I blame his agent, Mark Steinberg, who finally, at the end, gave $50,000 to the caddy who bitched about getting stiff for $5,000, even though that was the agreement they made. The point I'm making is that even though Kuchar made what he thought was a reasonable deal that he can get away with a local caddy who's probably never made more than $200 for a single round, to give him $5,000 for the week, and he was right in saying that 5,000 is a pretty good week. If you take every caddy in America, 5,000 is a week they can't even imagine. But it's how it's going to play. It's what the media is going to say. It's what's going to come out on social media. And Kuchar looked like an idiot for this.
And speaking of idiots, who is this never was on the PGA Seniors Tour who took it upon himself to butt into this and reveal that this is what happened between Kuchar and his caddy? You know that the whole whistle was blown. The story was started by this guy. I can't even think of his name offhand. He wasn't ever a prominent player on the Seniors Tour. He had somebody, one of his golf buddies, called him and told him what Kuchar had done. And he said, "Well, I didn't sleep for two nights thinking about whether I should go public with this. Thinking about whether I should."
I thought the caddy brought it public.
It was this guy on the Seniors Tour. You know, Brandon, you got the internet in front of you right there. You can find this real easily. Who blew the whistle on Matt Kuchar?
Tom Gillis. He's a local guy. He's from Michigan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. All right.
He's the guy who blew the whistle. And, oh, by the way, speaking of golf and why I'm losing interest very rapidly over it, I'm watching a game on Saturday night, I think it was, and on these little crawls in the bottom of the screen where they update you on all the sports, here's what it said about golf. Tiger Woods makes the cut. LA.
Yeah,
that's what it's called. Yeah. He made the cut, and that's news.
I got one other thing about the arbitration. Michael Fulmer got lost in a Fulmer in arbitration. You know that, right? And he lost to the tune of $600,000. They offered him 2.8 they offered him 3.6, 3.5, something like that, and it was $600,000 apart. And he lost, and now is only getting 2.8. But this is he's supposed to be the number one or number two pitcher on the club, mm-hmm. and you want to argue with this guy for $600,000. Does it make sense? I mean, you want this guy in a great mood when he goes to spring training. You want him to really play. You want him to bust his ass, do the things that he's supposed to do. And they fight him. And by the way, I think it's the first time in 10 or 11 years they won an arbitration case.
This guy has been the most disappointing player on that team for 2 years. We thought he was going to be a superstar, the next JV. Look what he's done, and look what he does in the offseason. He's a plumber in his native Oklahoma. Literally, that's what he does.
He's a what?
And so I'm saying, the Tigers are offering you. Yeah, he's a plumber.
A plumber?
He is a plumber. Yes, he is. And the Tigers offered him $2.8 million or something. What does this guy go, 31-6, like the man across from you went in 1968? He's been a terrible disappointment to the ball club. Tigers are offering over $2 million.
Yeah,
son,
you know, you're
sign
right.
The contract and get into spring training.
Yeah, Fulmer was 3-12 last year, 4.69 ERA, and a WHIP of 1.315 in 24 starts. He spent 6 weeks on a disabled list with a right oblique injury and underwent season-ending right knee surgery. God, this guy's been under the knife all year. No wonder he didn't win.
And the year before that, too.
Well, he had a good rookie.
I mean, he made the All-Star team that first year, and he just has not been the same since.
Rookie of the year, too, wasn't he? He was rookie of the year, wasn't he?
Was he rookie pitcher of the year? He might have been.
Fulmer was American League rookie of the year 2016.
And he hasn't been the same since.
Yeah, he was an All-Star in 2017. But no, I agree with you. But I don't know why they want to argue with him over $600,000. In the grand scheme of things, $600,000 is like a pimple on a goat's ass.
You're right about that. But again, looking at it from your perspective and from Eli's and my perspective, because we grew up in that era, $600,000 to play baseball for one season.
Don't get into that.
What would you have done about that?
Don't get into that.
What would you have thought about that? You know what I'm saying?
I understand. In the major league minimum today is $530,000.
Yeah. You know, I hate that argument.
That's a lot of money. $600,000 a year is a lot of money. And that's what they're arguing about.
There was the first ever sports talk show in Detroit was on WJR, and I want to mention who hosted it because he's a former rival of yours. You worked together with him.
That's not true. The first sports talk show was Norm Plummer on WWJ Radio back when. That was the first sports
show. In any case, I remember listening because it was a new format that kind of died before the DFN came around in 95. But Tom Sladaney, the great punter and place kicker from Ohio State.
Was holding out.
He wanted $50,000. And the Lions wouldn't give it to him, and so foolishly back then they did an interview with him on the show, and they let fans call in. So of course the first idiot fan says, "Hey, Sladaney, I'd be happy to punt for $50,000." To which Sladaney said, "Well, sure you would. The problem is you can't punt." So don't tell me that $600,000 is a lot of money. It is, but not when you're 1/100 of 1% of the best ball players in America. So don't say you should be happy with $600,000. That's a bunch of BS.
You're asking guys out there, you're asking guys who are making $60,000 a year, bringing their families down to the ballpark, buying four tickets, buying hot dogs, parking, paying $30, whatever. You're asking guys to continue to support this when players are pissed, like Bryce Harper, because they're only offered $300 million. There's a reality quotient here, Eli. I totally understand where you're coming from in terms of economics and a capitalist society, but there's got to be a reality quotient at some point. I'm having trouble paying my mortgage. I missed a car payment last month. And you want me to pay much to come down and see one game with my family of four?
Fans don't care. And the prices are the prices no matter what the players make.
I think a lot of fans do care.
They just care about their guy. And whoever signs Harper or Machado is going to love him. And they're going to love Fulmer as soon as he wins a game. They don't care about that. They really,
That's
really
not what I'm getting at. I'm talking about especially where you guys are in Detroit, my hometown. It's been through so many horrible economic problems over the last number of years. Fortunately, it's turning around right now. I mean, the numbers thrown around that these athletes are making, and again, to use the analogy of somebody who's a working man, and baseball especially is a working man's game, as Jim Campbell used to say, to come to the ballpark and pay all this money to support guys, you know, who are pissed off because so-and-so is only making $15 million this year, and I deserve $25 million, and I didn't get it.
And by the way, they just announced they're laying off 15,000 people at General Motors, by the way.
I saw that.
Yeah,
sure.
Let me also ask you a question, because you know everything. Yeah, the bus driver, right?
Thank
bus
you.
Driver?
I appreciate that.
Why the hell did they release Glover Quinn, the Lions? Why?
Because he's a 33-year-old safety, and safeties are—
Never missed a game.
it's money and age. Other than that, I can't figure it out. It's money and age, and that
yet
his best.
Why did they? Yet why did the Cleveland Browns sign a guy named Kareem Hunt who beat the hell out of a woman on video, and everybody in the world saw it, and he gets a contract for $1 million?
You got a lot of stuff flying around here that doesn't necessarily add up.
One guy gets released. A spokesman for the community, player rep, and everything else. Great guy, allegedly, right? Great super guy. And then the other guy.
Denny, here's the deal. That kid the Browns signed is a great, great player who really is going to help them win. Mm. You're talking about Glover Quinn. I couldn't care less about the Lions and don't even follow him anymore. But at 33, the Lions don't think that he can help them win anymore.
That's all.
That's why they let him go, and that's why
So as you explain it this way, then Glover Quinn is just too old to play football, and Kareem Hunt just has an emotional problem.
Not at all. That's totally fallacious. Glover Quinn is not a good a value for the Lions right now. Not a good value. And who else are we talking about? Kareem Hunt is a good value.
He's a hell of a football player. He's going to help them win.
But you know, it's the last thing, and I read the quote, but I shouldn't have glossed over it. When Jacob deGrom was going to make $17 million this year, and obviously he wants a lifetime contract, he says, you have the opportunity to look out for your family and your future. That is what bothers me. His family is already taken care of. Shut up about you need this. This is what Sprewell said years ago, Kenny Anderson when he turned down 40. You know, it's for my family. Come on, your family's already taken care of. Don't make it sound like you can't like you can't put the next meal on the table.
And folks, we're gonna shut this show down now. Yeah. But I got to tell you,
we're
one
not.
Thing.
What do you
next
mean? We're done. We're done.
Next week, we're gonna speak to the man who knows everything about spirituality. His name is Tim Tebow.
He's got
advice that will make you walk on the stars.
Walk on water, like his hero.
My stomach is disputing me. I'm not sure I'm going to be well enough to do the show on Thursday. Can you and I, you and Eli, hold down the fort for me then? I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it. I got one more story about baseball, which we're going to kick out of. About baseball.
Now the final story from Bob Page.
I'll give you a prediction right now. Tebow will be in the big leagues this year. Don't ask me how, but he's going to be there.
You might be right about that.
He may have to buy a ticket, but he'll get in a number of years ago,
and I get a call from my boss at ABC Radio in New York. He said to me, "He said, do you know who Garth Brooks is?"
Oh my God.
"I mean, he's some kind of like singer or something like that." He said, "Oh, he's huge." I said, "Yeah, what about him?" He says he thinks he's a real good baseball player, and the New York Mets have actually invited him to spring training. Not to make the team, but this guy's a serious guy who can hang, and they're having a huge press conference with him. Can you cover it for us? I said, "Sure, why not?" So I go up to Port St. Lucie. The Mets are going to have this thing for Garth Brooks. In the front row is a guy sitting there, and he's got all these Daytona 500 stickers and flags and stuff's in the front row. Garth answers all the questions about baseball. Very nice man.
Very nice.
Get to the press conference, and the guy in the front row says, "Garth, I just want to know, who y'all think going to win Daytona on Sunday?" Garth looks down at him and says, "Well, my friend, all I got to say about that is I never did think in my life that putting the pedal to the metal and turning left was very interesting." and the guy could have crawled in the nearest hole. And, of course, you didn't even mention that the annual running of the Daytona 500 was Sunday. What other sport is it? Name one. Where you begin your season with the greatest prize of all, and then you play the regular season. So let's start with the Super Bowl this coming September, and then we'll play the regular NFL season.
I did see some highlights. There were some terrific crashes in there. So that's
big time.
I don't know. I missed it.
In fact, they canceled the last 10 laps of the race, didn't they?
I don't know.
Oh, they had a horrible crash.
Now you're catching us on not having paid attention to
horrible,
all the news
horrible,
in the world of sports.
Horrible.
Anyway, and one final note before we forget. We do have a phone number now, okay, where you can call us, leave a voicemail message. We'll play it on the air. Your comments, your questions. It could be for all of us, one of us, and something you want us to do, or whatever it is. Here's the number.
Maybe we'll play it on the air if it's good enough.
Yeah, maybe we'll play it on the air. Of course, if you only get one, we'll probably play the
maybe
one.
Maybe you're going to give the number.
Here's the number. 760-89, then balls. So it's 760-89 balls, which is 22557, but 760-89 balls. Or you can follow us on Facebook at No Filter.
Now, why don't you explain to people how you came up, or how our producer Brandon came up with that?
Explain
769
it, Brandon.
Danny liked it. That's how we got it.
760-89 balls.
That's a reflection
of
the guys.
Brandon, please explain.
I gave the guys a list of about a dozen different ones, and a whole bunch of things were included. Sports, Denny, winner.
How many letters are there in the word testicles? Why didn't you just go for that? That'd be easier for
football,
people to remember.
Well, baseballs. Right? That's what we're talking about.
Point is, 7-6.
It's 9.
It is a Google Voice.
How about 8 testicle?
It's Google Voice, and so that's why it's a bizarre area code. But again, 760-89 balls. Call us. Thank you all for listening to another version of No Filter. We'll see you again when we record on Thursday.
Have a good week, folks.